Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. Well, I have to tell you, I'm becoming ever more familiar with our new studio digs at the state-of-the-art UCI's Applied Technology Center. I'm starting to like it here, especially like the orange seating to go with...
You like that orange, part, the bright
talk
orange.
Radio. Yeah. Wakes me up in the wee afternoon. Today, Paul, we are honored to have a recent guest who was just on the show a couple of weeks ago. And in our previous show, we focused on the value of creating a personal story. But according to listeners, we neglected to explain the tactics or procedures of actually creating a story. And so I chatted with Linda, and we decided that would be a good show because Linda is expert at teaching people how to tell their stories. Today, Linda and Olson and I will dedicate the majority of our time together with an emphasis on discovering precisely what the listener can do to create a compelling story. Now, our guest and friend today, again, is Linda Olson, a highly accomplished expert in helping others master their own story and then teaching them how to tell that story to other people. That's the primary focus of her business, and which is storytelling. And just a bit more about Linda. So if you don't recall from last time, she's a best-selling author, TEDx speaker, founder of Wealth Through Stories. As a former college dean and marriage and family therapist, Linda brings a deep knowledge of personal transformation through storytelling. And in her book, Your Story Matters, Linda offers a step-by-step process of how you can and why you should create your own story, one that reveals a very personal and informing light for the whole world. With that said, let's welcome Linda Olson. Linda Olson, welcome again to the next chapter with Charlie.
Oh, thank you. It's a delight to be back.
I know. It was such fun last time.
We did have a good time, yes.
You know, our previous show was very well received, yet some listeners wanted more because we talked more of the rationale behind what a personal story is all about. And people were asking the question, well, okay, that's good, but how do I go about telling my own story? And I thought, boy, that's worth a whole nother show. What do you think?
Well, I do think it's a great next step, because it's one thing to know we have a story. It's another to just have some steps or ideas of even where to begin to put this all together.
Yeah, you were telling me in a conversation before the show that storytelling is the most powerful format for retained information, that as we get retain information that we get on a regular basis. Can you give me those stats again? Do you recall those stats of 23% and...
I do, yes. I'd be happy to share that. It was actually some research I did quite some time ago, but... What they said was that we retain only 7% of what we hear. So you think about that, you know, whether you've heard a webinar, whether you've, you know, been at a live event, whatever it is, you've heard a speaker. Well, by the time you're driving off the parking lot, you've probably already forgotten most of that.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
really
only
true.
7%, yes, of what we hear, 23% of what we see. So basically anything that we can show people visually,
right,
or have some example or pictures or whatever it is, and then 70% of what we experience. So, I mean, those are, you know, very different percentages. And the whole idea of story is experience. as you share your story with me, I'm experiencing you, and as I share my story, you're experiencing me. And so we experience each other through story, and that is part of why when people share their story, that is remembered above anything else, of course, when it's told well.
You know, now, you know, one thing that there is that I think needs to be mentioned and we may not even realize when we're telling the story, then according to what you just said, we are truly being vulnerable. We are leaving, we're exposing ourselves, deepest part of ourselves, to other people. Is that, would that be true?
Absolutely. And I think that is, like I said, when a story is told well, and that is really sharing from that vulnerable position. But as we do that, something amazing happens. We open the door for others to share as well, because our own vulnerability, it's like it gives permission for someone else to be vulnerable, and all of a sudden our conversation can go from something pretty superficial and lighthearted to something very personal and depth.
Yeah, so I think it can be contagious, can't it?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Now, Linda, when we're creating stories and we're going to go through a process of what steps you would take and, you know, a number of different ideas around storytelling and tactics around storytelling, do we want to have in our hip pocket or in our toolbox, are we looking for one story or are we looking for several stories that we can use depending on the time?
You know, I think if we have just a couple of key stories, then, you know, a story is all about meeting someone else's need, the purpose of story is. And so if you think about what is the biggest need to the people you most communicate with, and, for example, today, as our world, even this year, has turned upside down, there's a lot of fear, a lot of fear. And if we have a story, a personal story, that ties into fear that we experienced at some point, and then how we overcame that, you know, that's something that in talking to people today, that could probably be shared with almost anybody.
Oh yeah, we're in such a fear-based culture right now. Yeah, you're right on target. So you just think if we just had two or three basic stories, but then once we learn the craft of storytelling, then we could just have multiple stories in our toolbox of life's adventures or just the adventures of what we did today. We tell it. You know, we go home and somebody at home asks, how was our day? And we could say, let me tell you a story of what happened today.
Exactly. And we do, because stories unfold every day. It's all part of our life. And so even though there may be a few key stories in our back pocket, when we hear somebody sharing, it will automatically trigger a story, you know, that we experience, something we experience. And so it's not like, you know, we have to have these down. I mean, it's a little different when you're speaking to an audience and you do want to be prepared and know exactly what stories to share. But if it's a casual conversation, you know, one-on-one or a small group, and people are just kind of sharing their experience or what they're dealing with now, stories will just automatically pop up and come to mind.
You know, one thing that comes to my mind, Linda, and I know we're going to talk about this later, so I really would not don't want to get into details on it, but the people that I know that are fond of telling stories, sometimes they can be exhaustively long and virtually no room for feedback or interplay. You're there to sit, and you're stuck as an audience listening to this 20-minute tale.
And we've all been there. And you're absolutely right. So story can be the number one thing to grab attention and draw people in. But when it's not told well, it's exactly what you just described. We're actually driving people away.
Yeah, we're gonna. You know, I'm tempted to go right into that, but I want to do some other things first, because I promised everybody we would get practical, and I'm going to get philosophical again, which is really easy for me to do. So, you have researched this matter, and one of the things that you have researched, one of the subject, is what is the reason or the reasons that people don't tell stories? You said there's three primary reasons people don't tell their story.
Yes, there's probably, I mean, I know, not probably, there are a whole lot more reasons, but the three key reasons that surface that I consider the top three, number one is that most people don't think they have a story. And nothing could be farther from the truth. I've had the privilege of working with people in the last 40-plus years with their story, and I've yet to find one person who doesn't have a story. And it's not just any story. If I work with them even for a short time, I could help them find a story that could transform lives. And we all have those stories, whether we believe it or not.
What is the...
Go ahead.
What do you ask that takes them quickly or takes them on a process to discovering that story? What kind of questions do you ask? Do you ask about their life history or?
You know, there are times I've asked about their life history, but I realized that's opening up the long answer. And so I want to hone in on this as quickly as I can. And so I may just ask, just tell me something that you have overcome in your life. Or I may even rephrase that and say, tell me about, just give me two or three things that have been a real victory in your life.
Right.
And as they share the victory, then I ask, what was the conflict that you overcame prior to the victory?
Yeah, so you're getting sort of, that's getting sort of into your outline too, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I want to, because you have such good stuff, I want to go over that outline clearly, but I know conflict is a major part. So the back to the reasons, the first reason is that people doubt they even have a story, and one of your roles is to convince them that they have more than one.
And it's not, you know, I don't want to convince them. I want them just to know. I want them to know that their life is made up of lots of stories. And you may not be sharing all your stories, but there are a few key stories that in your life that can really, that others can really benefit from. So one is just knowing they have a story. Secondly is, even if they could come up with something, most people think that others wouldn't be interested in hearing. And again, you know, nothing could be farther from the truth. What they have is important, and others need to hear it.
Now, is it something that when they tell it, Linda, they're going to tell it in context with a conversation, or are they going to bring it up sort of cold?
That would depend on the circumstance.
Uh-huh.
You know, it may be, depending on what the conversation is, it may be that the person they're talking to may be experiencing a lot of pain, and so then it triggers what they've experienced. So that could be that way. Of course, it's a whole lot different if, for example, you're a speaker and you're sharing, then you're coming prepared to share that part of your story. So it really varies.
Yeah, I can think. I was at a gathering last Friday night, and there were surprisingly more people than we expected, but we all did good at social distancing and eating outside, and And I had an opportunity for some reason. I don't even know what brought up the reason. We were talking about, I don't know the subject, but I talk about when I was 20 years old, I hitchhiked across the country for 3 months. And I was able to tell that story in, oh, I know, less than 5 minutes. You know, I don't know how many, but it was not a long time. And that story resonated for most of the night. For a long time in conversations, people would refer to that. That just gives you the power of story. That I didn't even think it was that powerful of a story.
But you never know what they're connecting with, what part they're relating to, and it probably triggered all of their stories.
You know, it did. You know, I'm sure that did. So that was you're saying on this third point, now that I have a story, how do I tell it? And it leads to what you were saying, it leads to conflict and simplicity and not being complex.
Yes, so let me, what might be helpful, since this was kind of drawn out in our conversation, but just to quickly review those three things.
Please.
That number one is that most people don't think they have a story. If they could come up with something, they don't think others would be interested in hearing it. And thirdly, if they came up with something, they have no idea how to tell it.
Yeah. Okay, so we have to overcome that, and that's something, you know, your book will help them do. You have at the end section of your website, you have exercises that people can do, and they can also work with you. And your book is, you know, I reviewed your book, and it's really quite helpful. I thought it was so well put together that will really help them. But let's give them the tactical ideas of how they create a story now. So work with me. Say, I don't have a story. What would you do with me to say, okay, Charlie, let's look for your story?
And at this point, I'd probably go back to what I had mentioned earlier in terms of, you know, just tell me something that you have overcome or even a victory in your life. And as they share the victory, I would ask, what was a conflict that came up prior to that victory? What was it, again, that you overcame in your life? And as they're sharing that, I come back and I refer to the conflict, that every great story has conflict. I mean, if you just stop and think for a minute of any movie that you've watched.
Oh, yeah, movies, books, you know, conflict is...
Absolutely.
There is no story without conflict.
Exactly, because it's through conflict, it's through problems, it's through pain that we connect with one another. You know, unfortunately, we're living in a real broken world today, and that's what connects us more than anything else.
So I'll tell you, let me just tell you mine, and then you can coach me here.
Okay.
I was in my... In my 20s, I managed a division of a carpet mill. And then at 30 years old, I went to seminary, and I was in seminary and got my master's degrees in Hebrew scriptures and New Testament scriptures. And I was a minister and in seminary for about 9 years. And I decided that was not for me, and I wanted to go back into the corporate world. So I had an opportunity to go into corporate consulting and training, and I knew I could deliver goods as a trainer and as a public speaker. I knew I had no problem with that, but then I was scared to death. What credibility do I have working with a company like Chevron with a history of experience at Western Baptist Seminary, you know, and a church? You know, what, my resume doesn't lead there, and I was just wondering... I knew I could figure it out. I always have confidence that I can figure things out. But I just thought my resume was going to be, you know, a black mark on it. So I really had to overcome that conflict, that tremendous conflict of, am I going to be credible? Are people going to listen to me? And I really, my first couple of jobs as a trainer, I was so hugely lacking confidence. Just did not think... you know, why would these people listen to me?
Well, first of all, let me tell you, that's a great story. And certainly that would bring up conflict for almost anybody, because you can look at those two fields in terms of your ministry background and dealing, you know, with, did you say Chevron?
Yes, Chevron, high-end business background. Or high-end business
okay.
entity.
And you think, what kind of connection or what kind of relationship, what kind of credibility, you know, is there? In other words, you come back with that question, why would they hire me? And then as you break it down, and I'm not sure how you did and how you overcame that, but my question to you would be, what is it in your ministry life? How were you able to help people? What were the skills that you used to basically connect with people? And how? Let me ask you that.
Yeah, that's a great question, Linda. That's really a tremendous question, because I don't think I ever asked that at the time, but it would have been through the value of compassion, empathy, identification. I've been through a lot. And I had been through a lot in business, because I had a decade of managing I had 100 people working for me. So, I mean, I knew what you faced.
Go.
I knew what you faced in corporations. It wasn't like a brand new thing for me, but it wasn't my most recent. But then it was about empathy, compassion, identification, and an ever-growing value of listening, of just sitting back
okay.
and listening. So those were ways that I connected, and I never really applied those. That might have shortcutted some of my angst at the time I was doing it had I relied on that. But I went a couple of different directions that worked, but I think your suggestion would have been really powerful. That's a great idea.
Well, and that was, and I'm sure there was much more. One of the things that comes to mind for me is you probably dealt with a lot of conflict resolution as a pastor, as a ministry leader.
You think?
So your communication skills, absolutely.
I was with single adults and doing marriages and divorces. You think I wasn't in the middle of conflict?
All the time, every day. And then you look at the needs, okay, What are they looking for in the particular position in Chevron? Well, you know, a big part of it, I'm sure, was conflict resolution and management skills and, you know, being good communication skills, being able to listen, being able to discern.
Yeah, you bang on.
So now it's like you can start matching these things up. And so often we're not looking at the skills and the strengths that we have. We're just looking at, these are two totally different organizations. Yes, they are, but there's many things that are the same. When we're communicating and working with people, you know, there are many similarities. And that's when we want to look at the strengths, not the weaknesses.
And you know, something else, the strengths, not the weaknesses, absolutely. And in addition to that, we need to look at it, I think, from what you're explaining here and what you're helping me understand, is that the context of the audience. My story can vary depending on who I'm telling that story to. If mm-hmm. I'm telling that story to fellow consultants, I tell them a different story. If I'm telling that story to somebody sitting in a meeting I'm training, I'm telling them a whole different angle of it. So the story takes on dimension, a different dimension depending on the audience. Is that right?
Exactly. It really depends on the need of the audience. And so once we clearly understand their needs, yes, we will share from a different perspective. Same story, different perspective. You'll emphasize different things.
Perfect. So now's when I would like you to get into, can you talk about your outline of introduction, conflict resolution, that helps our listeners, okay, what is it, what are the what are the concepts they need to grab hold of to create their story? And I think as we talked, I understood this as your outline and maybe the buckets they want to fill in order to create a story. Would that be correct?
It would be, yes. It's basically, you know, story can be such a broad term, and it's so hard to kind of bring this down. And one of the things that had really helped me when I was first introduced to this simple framework, and that is, we had talked a few minutes ago about conflict. Every great story has conflict. I believe conflict is the number one ingredient of putting a story together. And behind every conflict is a resolution.
And may I add in there that I would suggest that conflict is a main part of the story because it's an incredibly significant part of life, that we can't live life without conflict. And so that's what helps the audience identify with us, is that they can identify with a conflict a lot easier than they can identify with a resolution.
Yes, because that conflict is the pain.
Right.
And that's how we connect. So you're absolutely right. And then behind that is the resolution. So, for example, if we're just telling them about our victories and somebody is really in deep pain, they probably will walk away perhaps even feeling more depressed because they couldn't connect with those victories, with where they're at right now in their life. And so we want to connect with them, so we do that through pain and start with meeting them where they're at. So it's conflict. Behind every conflict is a resolution. And in a sense, you can say behind every resolution is a new conflict. And that can be what I call the story pathway. And the only other piece that needs to be added to that, if we're sharing a story, is an introduction. And that introduction really introduces, it lays the setting for the conflict. And it can be very short. So this is something we can use, this basic framework, as a simple two-minute story. So 50%, if we were to break it down, is a basic guideline. 50% of our story is conflict, 25% is the introduction, and 25% is the resolution. So most of our story, our little two-minute story, is spent in building up the conflict, and then it's kind of like there's that transformation or the transition, and then we just nail down our resolution, but we grab the interest through the conflict.
Yeah, you nail the interest through the conflict. You lay the groundwork through the introduction. The introduction has to be somewhat entertaining, or somewhat, I don't know if entertaining is the right word, but somewhat, it sparks my attention. Then the conflict is where we really identify, and the solution just falls right out of that. It's a beautiful outline.
Yes,
like
so
that
the
really
introduction,
well.
So often when we tell a story, now of course, again, it's different if we're a speaker as opposed to casually talking one-on-one, but I like to, if I'm speaking, I like to just jump right into story. So often we can spend all this time trying to maybe lay the setting of the story, and you lose the audience. And the thing is, we have to grab the audience quickly because attention spans are so short. I remember saying to a group, I was teaching a workshop, and I remember saying, I understand that, you know, on YouTube or something, if you don't grab people's attention in the first 7 seconds, they're gone to something else. And this young man corrected me, and he said, 3 seconds. And I said, really? Wow. 3 seconds to grab attention. So that introduction is very short. We jump right into it. And then, like I said, that sets them up for the conflict.
And it's an introduction to the conflict?
Yes.
That would be that's and I'm thinking on this when if I'm not an public speaker, I'm just in a group of people. I know, tell me if this was the right way to start it off. When I told people the story of my hitchhiking around the country,
mm-hmm.
I introduced that by saying, I want to tell you a story. So that sort of meant I'm going to have the floor for the next few minutes. Is that helpful or is that not helpful?
Oh, I think it's helpful because there is a sense where, in a casual way, you were saying, I have something important I want to say. And it was a way of getting their attention. So I think that was great.
Yeah, I like that. And I know producer Paul likes that when we say we're going to tell a story. Well, then tell a story, and then he, gets cuddled up by the radio and the fire on, and he wants to hear the story. Now, so those are the outlines. Obviously, not all stories are good stories. And the story is most likely to be a good one if they tell it the way that you were proposing. And one of the things that you bring up that really helps is sort of, rather than saying what to do, is what to say what not to do. And you list several points about what are the key ingredients of a poorly told story, or the three biggest mistakes people make in telling stories.
Well, I think that
I don't know if they're three or not, but
yes, I often refer to three biggest mistakes storytellers make, and the first one is really something you alluded to earlier, and that is that it's too long. Like I said, our attention spans are so short these days that if we go beyond 2 or possibly 3 minutes, somebody may still be looking at you, but I'll tell you what, they're thinking about who they need to call, what they need to make for dinner, and on it goes. And so if we want to really be able to grab and keep the attention of, even if it's a one-on-one, we need to learn to tell our stories short. And part of the reason that our stories are often too long is because we include so much detail. That detail is important to me, so I think it must be important to you. And so I want to make sure you get the whole setting and get everything. And meanwhile, our listener, we're losing them with all our detail. So it's often too long, too much detail. And the third area, which to me is actually the most important one, and that is because it's my story, my experience, and I'm sharing it, then I think it's all about me. And it really isn't. The purpose of story is to come alongside our listener, to be able to identify with where our listener is at. So the purpose of story is not about me, it's about you.
That's a whole mind shift.
And when I hear somebody, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said that's a whole mind shift. That's because...
Yes, it is.
We think the story is about me, but it really is. If we're telling it to someone, it's about, unless it's our psychiatrist, then the story has to be about them so they can access it and make use of it, and it makes sense in their lives. Otherwise,
yeah.
I'm just trying to impress or build up my resume or do something to help somebody, to give somebody reason to like me more.
Exactly. And that's a big difference, because when it's about you, then it's me taking a genuine interest in your life, where you're at right now, and how I can serve you. If it's about me, it's really very selfish in many ways. It's not about serving you. It's all about drawing attention to me. And that's a big, big mind shift, like you said.
Yeah, you had, again, you know, I don't want to take credit for this because this came from you and I like it. You said, if you want to impress someone, it's all about me. If you want to serve someone, it's all about them.
Yes, it was a simple quote that my husband actually gave me recently, and it's exactly that. Well, the way he had given it to me is, if you want to impress people, make it complicated. If you want to help people, make it simple. And it's the best thing we can do if with story is to simplify our story, and so people will remember it. They will remember a simple experience or story above anything else.
What do you think about this? I'm going to ask a really obtuse question. What do you think about this cross-culturally? Do people tell stories differently? You know, do the Aborigines tell stories differently than we would tell stories? Because my guess is the Aborigine culture is a very storytelling culture, because it's, you know, it's not written, it's not based on writing, it's been based on the oral tradition. So there's several stories. Do you think, would you say in something as primitive as that it's also other-centered or audience-centered? Or, well, certainly, because it's about culture. It's about building a culture.
Well, you're right. I think you just answered it. It is about building a culture. I think when you look at many different cultures, you know, here's the cool thing, is story is important in every culture. Story is our history. You know, it goes back thousands of years, and people use story over all those years. And it's just recently that really in our culture that story has surfaced once again. And I really believe it's because we are hopefully making more of an effort to connect and relate, to relate to one another. And story is the best way to be able to do that. And so there's been a whole big shift with in business, like with sales, for example. And so rather than just trying to have somebody sell us something, that they're wanting to connect and build that relationship with you. And therefore, stories have become very important because it is, when told well, it is the number one way to be able to do that, to connect and build those relationships.
So it's not so much a transactional relationship as a truly transrelational relationship. I'm not just buying a product from you. I'm buying something from you. In a sense, almost, I'm buying the salesperson. I'm not buying the product because I trust the salesperson.
And you're probably familiar with the business principle that says people buy into you before they buy into your product.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe in the same way as you were talking about different cultures, that story was used to share the culture, to help us understand them, to connect. And it's still about, you know, connecting and being able to understand people.
That's perfect. You know what I'd like to do, Linda, as we wrap up? I would like to rehearse probably something we told last week. We haven't talked about this, but this is all part of your, you know, your curriculum, so you're very adept at it. Okay, I'm not a good storyteller, according to me. I don't think I have a story. Why should I even spend the time to do this? What is the value for me? What's my return on investment?
Well, my question is, who do you want to serve? What do you consider your purpose, your mission, and who do you want to connect to?
Boy, that's you just went from preaching to meddling. Those are great questions. Those are great questions because they take my mind off myself. And as long as my mind is focused on myself in all sort of spiritual and mystical traditions, that's the false, that's the ego, that's all sorts of things that are talking that don't need to be talking. And we need to really be other-centered. As, you know, one text says, consider others as greater than yourself, you know, and so you make the wonderful point. If I want to be other-centered and focused on other people, I need to be thinking, what do they need, and how can I, in a big word in my vocabulary is, how can I influence them? That's what I look at my role is not to make decisions, not to give advice, but to influence thinking and influence decision-making that is consistent with who you are, who you were built to be.
Absolutely. Well said. Because to me, it's kind of like, once I answer that question, what is my purpose, what's my mission, who do I want to serve, once I answer that, then of course it's looking at what is the best and most effective way to influence, to impact, to transform lives.
Influence,
and
impact,
answer,
and transform.
Story.
Yeah, that's great, Linda. That's wonderful. So, as I said, we're wrapping up. One thing that you said you wanted me to make sure I told our listeners is that if anyone were to email you, and I assume that's at wealth. I have it written down here that. No, I don't. That wealth stories for wealth. What is it? What is the email?
Yes, you know what? And what they can do is I can send you. Well, let me just stop. What I was offering is anybody who may be interested in going a little deeper with story or understand what we talked about today, I would be happy to give you a PDF. Copy of my book, Your Story Matters, Own Your Story and Tell It with Clarity, Confidence, and Impact. And what I can do, Charlie, I will send you the link to that, and then they can just click on the link and pick it up right there.
Okay, perfect. That's tremendous. That is so gracious of you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Yeah, I will absolutely do that. And so, Linda, once again, I want to thank you for spending so much time with me today, and I'll have all of your contact information and your TEDx talk, and I put Your Story Matters on Amazon. That will be on our show notes, and I want to thank you so much for doing a second interview with me. That's kind of you.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you. And I think you really helped our listeners today in creating a great personal story. And as always, I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, Charlie Hedges here, signing off. Bye for now.